When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And welcome to the NXT 2.0 review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Amphlett and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT 2.0. But before we get into this, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT 2.0, but also Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a round of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hanford and Sidgwick to review the show we have to call NXT 2.0, apparently. And what a show this was, Hanford. First of all, what did you make of the new look NXT?
Great. Like, just great. I'll bore of it. Like, I'll tire of it like everything else within a month, because you can already see that this show will be boring us again quite soon, because by the end of the in-ring portion, at least, of the 2 hours, it was falling into all the sort of WWE traps, but it was sort of neat seeing NXT's branding on a show that looked like this for, I'd say, the first 45 minutes to an hour. Like, being earnest, there were style choices that I genuinely liked. That giant NXT logo that's always facing the hard camera, being amenable to different people's branding and colours and all that sort of stuff, was kind of cool. Love the seating arrangement around the ring. We talked about it a bit on the little animated preview that we got. Looked even better in real life. Mm. Like, genuinely just a really cool presentation of a wrestling show. Like, felt airy, felt interesting. What it did, like, and I've seen a bit of criticism for this on the timeline, but I sort of feel like a lot of people are punching down on a lot of these aesthetics. I think it's the done thing to not like wrestling that looks like this. Not the Kevin Dunn thing, that would come later. But, like, it's the done thing to not enjoy wrestling that looks like this. I'm all up for, like, anything that addressed the CWC. And that's what this look did specifically. It addressed every complaint with the CWC and fixed it. So I thought it looked tremendous. The work started to sag. And then it was like, oh, I'm kind of bored of the paint splash ring posts and the overly seating, because the wrestling's getting a little bit boring again. But for week one, it was absolutely that bucket of freezing cold paint in the face, to paraphrase an old phrase. It just, I don't know. It was like one of the biggest complaints we've had for months and months and months was addressed. So I have no complaints about that whatsoever.
I mean, I completely echo that. It looked very much like a Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn production. And I kind of wish Raw SmackDown looked like this, because their production now has completely withered and died over the past however many years, with the camera cuts, with how everything just looks so homogenized and polished and stained with a light and a deep red or blue primary color. This is vibrant. And this is the first thing I thought when I saw this setup, very much was, this is why Paul has been demoted. This is why they hated what it looked like, because with this beautiful setup, into it was very garish with the colors, but in terms of the architecture of the NXT arena, whatever the frick they're calling it now, there's not that many people in it, but it looks like there's loads.
Yeah,
or at least loads more. This is why Vince McMahon won. I'm telling you, all the way back to Dick Ebersol and NBC, this is how he won. He's not going to win with this. but this is how he won. Mm. It looked like there were loads of people there. They were very enthusiastic, whether they were high on like the atmosphere of change, like NXT for the first time since November 2019's dominated the discourse and the timelines today. It looked very, very polished and bigger than it had any right to be. Didn't look anywhere near as garish as the memes in anticipation, licked-lipped anticipation, didn't really come across like that. And ultimately, we like to give our summary of the show before we delve into the guts of it. It was nice to enjoy NXT again. With total irony, I should add, but it was nonetheless nice.
And on this night, a star was born, and I'm not even talking about Bron Breakker. We'll get to the guy I'm talking about in due course. And
what?
A wrestling wedding, which I'm giddy with excitement to talk about. But the show starts with promos from the four men competing to be the new NXT champion. Tommaso Ciampa says he doesn't care which NXT it is, despite this being a new NXT. He's going to be the champion of it. I don't think it's time for a Bros White to be a champion. Cool Kyle O'Reilly says he's one win away from achieving a goal that is 16 years in the making. It's about damn time you into the NXT title. And our pick, our call to be the new NXT champion, LA Knight. He cuts a promo and you think, yeah, he's going last because he's going to be the new champ. And this is the first glimpse of what we're going to see by the end of the night. He shoots on the former champion, Samoa Joe. He says the medical reason for him vacating the title was due to him losing his manhood. What's that mean, Sige?
Say all that again?
What does losing his manhood, what's like, can you translate that for me?
Don't do this cack.
Yeah, thanks, really. he said he's scared of LA Knight, and all three others are stuck in that same spot now. When in walks Bron Breakker, who was, I think, called Bronson Rex Steiner. I thought he was called Rex Steiner at one point. But anyway, no, he's in there. He's in a very colourful, almost Steiner's-esque, let's say, singlet. And he says, hello, Mr. Knight, effectively. He wants to prove himself. He's excited for this new NXT. And LA Knight responds by saying he's going to beat the brakes off this cross-eyed half-wit. Sige, before we get to this opening match, what did you think of this to start the show?
Weird. What I loved about this very specific, the series is on its arse, but it's still making just enough money, so we'll just get some new cast members because, well, ironically, when this usually happens, like loads of them get big. The TV sitcom cast get big and they take up different acting roles and they open the door of the vehicle that got them to stardom and just become stars. And then you get like, hey, look at the cousin that hasn't been here for 7 years. He's always been here. And like Bron Breakker, I was like, what? This wasn't that, like, that's what I'm looking for. Inexplicable, I guess. Like, there was a worse one later, and it was even funnier, but this still had that same energy. The difference, of course, being that the stars of NXT didn't become stars on the main roster. So it just adds to the weirdness of it all. But my God, he's the idiot meathead son of Rick Steiner wearing early 90s Steiner Brothers gear. How can I not be into that, man? It's hard, my stuff.
Yeah, hit me in those exact same feelings. What was great about that gear was that the more you examined it, the more your eyes moved to the awesome muscles underneath it. And it was like, well, I'm already a Bron Breakker guy then. And like, let's have a moment on Bron Breakker, can we? Because there's other examples on this. What was great about Vince and Bruce and Johnny and Kev getting the wheel of all this is that we've also gone all the way back to the late 2000s, early 2010s random name generator era of developmental guys. And I am absolutely here for that.
Like, ironically,
oh, yeah, oh, it's all awful. Like, you had the days of Breeden Creeden and Caitlin Kraft. I remember there was once, like, this is before, obviously, Sting eventually did show up. Somebody mocked up what he would look like in FCW, and the name they gave him was Borden Stevens. And it just, like, it felt so right, because Borden is, it like, an ideal first name. Bron Breakker's terrible. But, you know, Eli Cottonwood was terrible. Michael McGillicutty was terrible. They, like, made that an art form. That generation of terrible wrestling name became a thing. It was back tonight with the vent. We've got it in literally the next match. One of the guys, the losers against Imperium, had another Brooks Jensen. Just ice and a wall. And it's not even like, see what sticks. It's like, oh, it's fallen off. It's not stuck. Give them it anyway. Pick the lumps of off the floor that have slid down the wall, and that's your job now. I love it, man. I like Bron Breakker's ridiculous. Like, I think this, you know, Rex Steiner was right there. It's your actual surname. It's a legacy thing. Bron Breakker. It's got TB. It's alliterative. Sorry. You know the rules. I didn't make him. You boss did. That guy right there who doesn't respect any of yours, but he likes them biceps, and so do I.
Yes, Bron Breakker dominated for the most part. LA Knight, you know, LA Knight, he's the million-dollar megastar. He was in control early on. But Bron Breakker's, yeah, a Steiner. So quite big and controlling in that, oh, that 90s singler, like you say. But Knight fights back. He hits a clothesline, hits a jumping neck breaker. But then all of a sudden, Breakker goes, right, enough of this. Grabs LA Knight, belly to bellies him. Knight tries to fight back. Breakker just picks him up, gorilla presses him, drops him, power slam, 1, 2, 3. And I go, well, LA Knight's not going to be the new NXT champion then, Hamlet.
Yeah. You know, like, we got quite a bit wrong in terms of the predictions of that match. And I guess we'll get to more of that in the match itself. But certainly our belief in LA Knight's success was rooted in the idea that you look at all the other, and I mean look, you look at the other competitors and you think, he's kind of the biggest. Like, he's short, but he's like stacked and stocky and jacked and all this sort of stuff. And then they were like, aye, but we've got tall and stocky and jacked. So why would we need LA Knight anymore? He's a lesser than to their other bigger guys. What I liked about this, genuinely what I liked about this, and this is a pattern throughout the show, one of the few things they got right, which NXT has been getting wrong for months, was the length of the match. There was nowhere near enough time for us to get bored. There was nowhere near enough time for us to see the obvious gaps in Bron Breakker's game. And I don't mean that because I think he did anything wrong, just because the fact that he's young and he's still getting going and we've never seen him on screen before tonight. This genuinely was highlighting the positives and hiding the negatives. So in that sense, there's a bit of like earnest praise for this. Let me take that away, because I very much enjoyed somebody screaming for Vic Joseph to scream, he's wrestling like a dog-faced gremlin! And then, like, you can imagine off mic going, Can I call him a Steiner brother? No. Hey, I don't know why I said dogface gremlin. Nobody else has been a dogface gremlin. Like, I love this stupid company.
The stupid company's back. And I have to have a little bit of earnest praise, and then I'm going to bury it in a second. This is like the good thing about having a developmental show, whether it's a formerly developmental show, which this now is, or whether it's something like the WWF in the 90s, when you can actually plot from day one your emotional investment in a performer. And you know that WWF in the 1990s was always competent, almost always competent or long-term in its vision. So you can actually bother with it. It's always so rewarding. We've seen it with Jungle Boy. How rewarding has it been with Jungle Boy from day one? This was better, almost, for how green Rex Steiner was. Bron Breakker, Jesus Christ. I love that he was green, because at some point I'm going to see him evolve into someone less green, and someone really formidable, someone who matches the hype, someone who can go full Rick, or hopefully Scott Steiner. Hopefully he takes after his uncle, because he was the best one by miles. This was smart booking as well. Because what you've done is, in the event of writing somebody out of the four-way main event match, is that you've got a ready-made replacement in Bronson Breakker. Bronson, what's he called?
Bron Breakker.
Everyone's name is Bronson or Breakker or Braun or Braden or Broaden. Like, they're all the same at this point.
Honestly. Blade, Laser, Bron Breakker.
So what's good here is that with one eye on the write-off that happened in the Fatal 4-Way main event, what you've done was is that you've introduced a new character to the audience who's proven himself capable of defeating someone in that 4-Way. Mm-hmm. So that person can slot into the Fatal 4-Way later on in the night. Smart Bookham. We'll revisit this later.
Yes, indeed. We'll come back to that. Not to spoil the main event, or not the main event, actually, the co-main, I suppose. Then we got the Boring Bastards in Imperium versus Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs. Who's Brooks Jensen's relative? Is it Albert?
Buchanan.
Oh, Bull Buchanan. Yeah. Oh, why have I got that in my head? I don't know why.
You should know that, Wilbon. Not to steal one of your bits here, but Brooks, being the son of Bull Buchanan, makes it one of the 56 Bs of NXT. Let me begin. There's Braun, there's Breaker, there's Brooks, and so on.
Brooks and Briggs, yeah. Brooks and Briggs versus Imperium.
But versus the Boring Bastards.
They cut a little inset promo, which is very retro as well. Jensen immediately comes in and just power slams Fabian Aichner. So that was good. But the Imperium eventually, you know, use their wiles and numbers and what have you to finally outwit these two relative rookies. And when Brooks Jensen goes up top, Marcel Bartel distracts him. That allows Aichner to hit him with that massive butterfly suplex off the top, Imperium bomb or whatever it's called. Fabian Aichner covers him. 1, 2, 3. Light and shade, I suppose, Sige.
Yeah, I got nothing out of this. I got a big, fat, Deep South Wrestling, Florida Championship Wrestling, nothing out of this. You know what? I quite enjoyed that. True to the roots of developmental when it went terrible. I got now out of there. I couldn't believe it. It was so funny, though. I did get something out of it. I tell a lie. It's just like, you're under a rainbow, mate. Like, cheer up. Cheer up. There's literally nothing sacred. Your family name. One of the greatest professional tag team wrestling units ever in the Steiner Brothers. They're not sacred in NXT canon. Do you think Imperium's sacred? Huh? I can't even remember anything that happened in this match, if I'm honest. Like, what a bunch of nondescript. Josh Briggs kind of sucks. All very nondescript, but not in a kind of idiotic meathead energy that we saw in this first hour. Just boring.
I like as well it's Will Bond's take on Natalia every now and then when the music hits and it's like, oh, it's not Brett. It's like, it's not Walter. It's Imperium. I like that a couple of times already, Cedric has made the point that this is feeling like developmental. There's some praise buried in me taking the piss out of the show. Like, this show had a bit more identity than the last 7 months of NXT because it clearly was a developmental show again. Like, they established that in the first hour quite well, I thought. It's like, that's what this is now. And Imperium are perfect for a developmental show because they got good fundamentals.
Great fundamentals.
Dull as dishwater, but great fundamentals. Yeah, they're a couple of hot prospects, IMO, Imperium. Solid work.
Right, we get a promo from Hit Row. They're talking about B-Fab and how fabulous she is. She trained with the best, she's ready to win. And she did, she dominated another sort of short squash match here. She faced Katrina Cortez. Cortez again got in some offense. She comes off the middle rope though and gets a high kick right in the face, a neck breaker, and the 1, 2, 3 for B-Fab. B-Fab immediately cuts a promo saying that, you know, people didn't think that she could do this. Just because she can, you know, talk on the mic as well. She can do both. Just because she's on the outside for all the other stuff with Hit Row. She's, you know, she's there to make a statement, make a point and establish herself. And she, you know, talks about her running with Electra Lopez of Legado del Fantasma. She says, you know, don't stick your nose in our business effectively. But out comes Legado del Fantasma and Lopez is on the mic. She says, B-Fab clearly didn't learn her lesson the first time. They can do it all over again, and this time she won't need a pipe to shut that yappy mouth. B-Fab says, I'd love to do that. Let's do it right now. Lopez is up for it. She goes to go into the ring and confront her, but Santos Escobar stops her, and B-Fab yells that Santos saved her life, Michael Sidgwick.
I remarked on a podcast, it was during the Cypher that B-Fab completely stole the just magnetic performance. I said at the time, if B-Fab can go, WWE has its next absolute top star of this women's division. Raw, SmackDown, whatever you want to call it. She'd be almost impossible to screw up because what a personality. Like, what a presence. What a unique, distinct charisma. She can't go. So... She absolutely, this was useless. This was absolutely useless, and it should not have been useless because it didn't go long enough to reveal itself, and yet it did. Like, I'm a mark for the rude awakening, but it wasn't done well. And this is legitimate second month of wrestling school stuff. But that's what the show is now. So enjoy the show, Paul. Enjoy the show. This show as well, like, the way it was arranged and who you obviously could see at the end of the show, probably going to be a new NXT champion. The performers that were on the show who are going to be prioritized going forward. If it didn't feel like something was going to die, it definitely felt like that tonight, last night. Like, TakeOver is dead. Like, it's a bit of a shame. People loved it. It's dead. And so was this match.
Yeah. Rude Awakening was right, because I didn't want this to be as awful as it was. But I got a shock. Like, what was her whole thing? It was like, people say she couldn't do both. Well, those people were bang right. Like, I was trained by the best. Well, I don't think you were trained by William Regal, because you didn't move your left foot.
Fire Terry Taylor.
Rooster! Get her back in the...
Just get Dr. Tom in, for God's sake. Nice.
Get her back in the training ring and fix it. This was no good. This exposed B-Fab, by proxy exposed Hit Row, I thought as well. And exposed Electra Lopez, who I was really high on last week because of that power slam spot. Kind of like stole, I don't want to call them headlines, stole the mid-range conversation from last week's NXT. For me, Electra Lopez, and I thought this segment was a miss as well. Like, kind of talking over each other, rubbish that, like, ran into a break. There was no sense of conclusion, or other than in a wrestling sense of, like, you know, I'll see you down the road or whatever. It didn't kind of come to any sort of exciting end. It was just a thing that happened, and the match was bad. It's like a minute or something. Again, like, they're keeping them short. I can't complain about, like, how short things are going, so not to expose people, and they still did. This wasn't on the fault of the agent and other people trying to lay out the show for the betterment of the talent. This was, unfortunately, a case of the talent that couldn't, like, make the most of the opportunity. This, like, really disappointing. Hide her away.
They're in the right place. We shouldn't be watching them train and develop, but they're in the right place.
Don't forget, there's a wedding tonight. The groomsmen are backstage getting ready, putting their black gloves on. It is Johnny Gargano, of course, Odyssey Jones, and Ikari Gav, baby, to the moon. He's, you know, spent a lot of money on this. He's bought champagne for the lads getting ready. But Gargano says tonight could be perfect. It's just missing one thing. What's that? There's a knock at the door. Austin Theory is back. He did admit to running away, but he couldn't miss Indy's wedding. And not only that, but he brought a priest with him. Damian Priest, that is. Gargano says, you do know he's not a real priest, don't you? And Damian says, I'm just here for the party, lads, to be perfectly honest. And they go to do the high five thing, the no-look high five. And Gargano says, put that away, and gives Austin Theory a big old hug. Great to see him back, Hamflet.
It was really...
I've missed it.
What a hospital pass.
Really inspired choice to have Dexter Lumis Grimes' outfit be his old stalking clothes. Like, that really made me laugh. You've got Gargano and Theory in his black Steve Jobs polo neck and leather gloves, as if they're, like, they're going to break into the wedding through a window or something like that. Really enjoyed that. Damien, like, something makes me laugh about Damian Priest getting a call. Oh, yeah, you know, the hometown boy done good. You escaped this show. You've made it onto Raw. We haven't screwed you up yet on Raw. It's going to feel big when you come back, star presence. Do you think that was the pitch? Or do you think it was, we need your name for a gag? A one-line gag in a backstage segment, and your name makes the most sense. We'll take you. It was either you or Keith Lee, and we couldn't fit Keith Lee into some wedding patter. So on you come. Like, it's funny, man. It's funny. It's rubbish.
I mean, I've got no... when he was saying that, I'm trying to think, is there any... You know how Keith Lee likes to do his thing on Twitter where he'll change his name to, like... It's not unbelievable, you know, stuff like that. Like, undisputedly. Yeah, He does it. Is there anything like...
Relentlessly.
Yes, is there anything else he can do? The marriage, wedding stuff, church stuff? Matrimonially, Adam.
Matrimonially, vowsly. Ringleader.
Right, that was followed by the winner of the breakout tournament. Of course, Carmelo Hayes getting interviewed in the ring. He said he's got the momentum, he's got the juice now, but he's got a target on his back, and people won't ever catch him off guard again. He said this is a numbers game. So he's called his boy Trick up, and Trick says, I'm about it. I don't know what that means, to be perfectly honest. Hayes says as long as he's got this contract that guarantees him a title shot, of course, Trick's going to go everywhere he goes as well. And Trick gets on the mic and says he's proud of Carmelo. He calls him the golden child of NXT. He's got a bone to pick with him. He's seen him talk the talk, but, you know, who's this new humble Carmelo Hayes? That's not who he used to be. And Hayes says, you know what, you're right. No holding back, no reason to be humble. I'm the golden child. I'm the chosen one. When I shoot, I don't miss. And if I pass it, Trick's going to receive it. And then they go to leave. Out comes Duke Bloody Hudson. He said he got a scheduled bloody match. And he sees you bloody got bloody lucky in that bloody tournament, mate. And Bar just passed them. And this is Trick says, look, this is what I've been talking about. This stops today. He goes in the ring, takes a shot, goes in the ring, spin kicks Duke Bloody Hudson, and the two of them beat him down. What did you think of this, Sidge?
Well, like, Trick has told Carmelo Hayes, like, come on, you need to change your act. You need to change your attitude here, pal. And Carmelo Hayes is going, you know what, you're right. Is he right? Because at the start of the promo, you said he had all the juice and the momentum. So, like, had Trick not said anything, you were probably going to have the confidence to go and win a title.
But also, there was a little breadcrumb. I'm not sure if you saw it here for something that was going to come later on, because I'm not sure if you noticed Trick saying he got the gift of the gab and the gift of the jab. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, they're bringing it back, lads.
Like, at the end of the day, this was odd. Very much. Like, what I love about it, I don't mean to be cruel because, you know, Carmelo Hayes genuinely has, like, a really technically accomplished ring style. But I just love, like, it's not just the pro, like, watching this show as an experience was, you know, a bit chaotic, a bit stupid, loads of main roster trappings, very stupid, very fun. But the best thing about watching this show is imagining the construction of the show in the background and just Vince, Bruce, Johnny, and Kev just taking one look at Carmelo Hayes, poor bastard, and just saying, yeah, he's boring. What do we do to make him less boring? Get him a heater, turn him heel, done.
So tomorrow people can do side-by-sides of Sean and Diesel. Trick Williams is a little bit taller, so there's a Sean and Diesel energy about these two. I love that wrestling just does this stuff. Carmelo Hayes basically tonight playing the role of 2019 Excalibur. Here's my best friend, Trick Williams. Like, as if the whole audience is supposed to be hyped about this. Like, class, man. So stupid. I quite like Trick Williams. I felt something instantly between Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams.
Yeah.
I know less than nothing about Trick Williams. So for all I know, they are actual mates down at the Performance Center. There's some chemistry has been acknowledged off screen and they've gone sod it. You know, like, we're going developmental again. Treat yourselves. Let's see how this looks, you know. And if that's the case, it worked. My gut feeling is something closer to Cedric's. It's like he's short and we don't quite trust him. Give me a heater. And they've gotten away with one because these two seem to play off each other really well. Like, as far as over elaborate wrestling beatdowns go, a setup springboard flying elbow looked awesome. Like, that shouldn't work in the context of a beatdown, and they kind of pulled that off. So I didn't think it was so stupid at its root, but I sort of thought this came across all right at the end. And I'm not interested in this Carmelo Hayes Trick Williams pair. So why not? Like, not a complete disaster, this.
Is there another wrestler called Trick in NXT?
No, I've never.
No,
I'm really paying much attention to chilling and watching it.
Trick Brick or something.
No, I was just double checking it because I, you know, trick me once. I won't let them trick me twice. Right, okay. Backstage is Mandy Rose. She's got a new look, but we can't see it. She's got a new look, hasn't she? Jesse James, Jolene.
I can't wait for the Kelly's trick me button the next time we're in the office to kill. Whoa!
He's going to get worse in about 5 minutes as well.
Oh, God. Great brothers. What time are you going to be
Zach? Zach, who?
I don't even know a Zach. He's dead to me.
Gigi and JC are loving whatever Mandy Rose's new look is. And they are in action next against Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro. And they go, let's have a quick check what's going on backstage with Kyle O'Reilly. And they go to the guy. He gets the crap beaten out of him by Pete Dunne and Ridge Bloody Holland. I couldn't believe that. Normally, it's just like, you know, shadow boxing or whatever, or taping the wrist. And they were like, oh, let's see how Kyle O'Reilly's getting on. Have some of that, you prick. Oh, I guess he's not going to be competing that four way for the title, are you then?
Sorry, can we have a minute on this now? Because I don't want him to interrupt the important analysis about the tag team that became a trios match. Adam Cole sat next to Tony Khan in the presentation, in the press conference after All Out, and he just said, you know, I was nothing but grateful to WWE and they were very graceful with me. No hard feelings whatsoever. Came in when I did because it was very important to me that I concluded business with my best friend the way it needed to be done. I'm just watching this going, well, it wasn't important to any of them. You might as well have off in the spring. You could have been in for double or nothing at this rate. Like, they didn't care. I don't want to be nasty. Like, we're laughing. There's a retribution energy about this. This guy could lose his job. So I feel like a bit ghoulish, but proper CM Punk can't work the scramble match energy to this one. Like, get our glossy guy in, you know.
I had the exact same thought, and the key depressing difference is that they didn't even strap up Kyle O'Reilly in the first place. No. At least Punk got the belt, and it was like a hard consolation. Oh, I don't really want to run with you. Don't know why we did that. Like, they never even gave him the belt.
Anyway,
did he get saved here, or was the footage of him getting saved shown later?
I think, yeah, eventually got. I mean, it was a bit too little, too late at this point, but yes.
Well, like attended to at least. Did you see him get tended to here?
I think so.
Yeah. Can we talk about Von Wagner?
We'll get to that one when we get to the announcement. Yes, because we had the match, but it doesn't really matter, does it? Because Casey went up top basically. Mandy Rose comes out, trips her, DQ, and then they beat her down. And Mandy Rose takes down the hood to reveal she's not blonde. She's a brunette. Somebody got a haircut. And what did you think of Mandy Rose's new look, Sige?
Suits her, I guess. It's cool. She's like, I see people dye their hair all the time. What does this say about a character? She's a bit of a darker presence. She's hanging around with goths now, so she dyes her hair brunette.
I just thought
black. If you're going to be a goth with Gigi Dolan, listen to Marilyn Manson, which you shouldn't be doing on the Nickelodeon show. You shouldn't be doing, because Marilyn Manson is an absolutely grotesque predator. You shouldn't be having the Jimmy Hart version of Marilyn Manson because of this. And you know, she didn't come in as this heel, as this baby face. She came in as a heel. She just got a hair dye. It's so cosmetic. Work in the matches, which is such a beautiful Raw special. Vince is here, baby. Yeah, he's here to be Vince. I can't remember a single bloody move other than Catanzaro and friggin' Carter's spot.
Mm. You say that about like Vince being here. Surely the one thing you want to do if Vince is there is like change yourself from being blonde. What was she thinking? Like, absolute career suicide. Oh, Vince is here. I think I'll get rid of this blonde hair. I've heard he doesn't care for that.
Well, what if Paul told her to do it a couple of weeks ago when he still had a semblance of power? If she was a smart worker, she'd go, well, he's bloody on the outs. On the outs of creative, just to make that abundantly clear. Yeah. Outs in the corridors of power. Do not put words in my friggin' mouth.
I just thought, oh, cool. Dolph Ziggler's here in NXT. Remember when they went in, oh, Dolph Ziggler, brown hair.
Yeah.
Got brown hair. There you go.
Always right. Yeah,
Dolph Ziggler wanted a shaft, Manny Rose, once upon a time. So LTST.
Triple H advice to his East every time. Don't wear all your gear tonight. This is your first match against John Cena. Save it for the big pay. Never wrestled again, Paul.
Why wrestle again, Paul? Why wrestle again?
Wasted money on a pimp jacket, Paul.
So anyway, Saray runs down to even the numbers. And yeah, when we come back from the break, guess what? It's a trios match. It's a trios match here.
Can you call it a six-person tag? Come on.
He's doing it a needle. I know he is. He said it three times. Why would you say it three times? Why would you use a trio of trios other than...
Beetlejuice, the trios match. Absolutely. Mandy Rose, Gigi Dolin, JC Jane versus Saray, Caden Carr and Casey Catanzaro. Saray... It's Saray. She's great. Come back from the break and she's hitting a missile drop kick. And then she gets a two count off the back of a fisherman suplex. Carter comes in, gets a drop kick, backsplash. In comes Casey Catanzaro, but the distractions catch up with her. She gets isolated in the wrong corner. Later on, everything breaks down. Everyone attacks each other. We leave Mandy Rose and Saray in the ring because of the history there and the kicking in the face and the what's happened? She broke her nose sort of thing from the other week. Carter comes in, super kicks Mandy Rose for a two count. But in the end, Rose hits a jumping knee to Carter's face to get the victory and, I don't know, set off this new heel stable, I suppose, Hamflet.
Yeah, like a passable introduction of, if you want to call them like a new heel group. It's, she's died there. They've existed for weeks. But this was an intent to like establish them as a new heel group. The work wasn't ever, I don't think, at any point, including when Saray was in there, interesting enough to be spoken about. You know, they were going through the motions. They start very much like when you're on those old episodes of Tough Enough or Breaking Ground, when you see them work a match for the benefit of the judges or for the coaches or whatever. I felt like we were watching one of those. It just, it was like a dress rehearsal. They'd worn the gear for it or something like that. And as a result of the work being too bland, this was the first point I noticed that if indeed Vince was there or somebody else with Kevin Dunn, it was a point at which Kevin Dunn's elbow was being jabbed. Was being jabbed with an elbow to do what he does on Raw. Because I'd been quite enjoying at the start of the show. They would do this when they do new stuff. SmackDown Live 2016, NXT 2010. They stopped using the hard camera and they use the jib. Like, so it, you know, sort of makes it a bit different, doesn't it? Like, this show's always moving. Like, normally it takes about 6 weeks, Vince, to be like, what the hell is that? I hate it. I can't keep attention. It took half an hour on this show because this was just cut, hard camera. Mm. Like, they'd got bored of that already, and it was within this match I noticed because I didn't think the work was interesting enough to keep my attention.
Those poor people. Oh, he's not wrong.
Yeah, sorry.
You're not wrong.
Thanks for the solid work. Solid work, guys. No botches. Thanks for the solid work.
I can't remember anything of the match.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, let's continue because there was a video package for NXT Women's Champion Raquel Gonzalez next. And I thought, oh, great. That's going to be fantastic to lead into the title match. That was it. That was the last I saw of her on this show. What happened, Hamflet? That was promised, wasn't it?
I don't know. Your timing's too tight, Kevin. They realized that they wanted to get two LA Knight matches on instead. This card had enough. Like, that women's title match did feel like a bit of an outlier in the preview and the promotion of it. Is it like, there's a lot happening here. Like, this is... So I guess they just decided to save it and not tell us any about it. So they've kept a few things from the old NXT. It's not all gone.
Right, this was the bit, Sige, with William Regal announcing that Kyle O'Reilly is out of the Fatal 4-Way due to that backstage attack, and replacing him is Von Wagner. Now, who's he related to?
One of the Beverly Brothers. Wayne Bloom. Wayne Bloom.
That's
the one. He's a big unit. He is a big unit. The son of one of the most fabulously cruel jobber murderers of his day. If he's half as bloody horrible as his father, this is going to be absolutely incredible. Incredible. What a run. But I love this. Like, Kyle O'Reilly's been battered, right? The implication is we don't even deem him worthy of being in the match, right? The implication is that Pete Dunne versus Kyle O'Reilly are going to have a feud that Vince is just going to keep the lights on for a bit of the old NXT, you know, and he's not really going to care about it. It's going to go nowhere, and who cares who wins? But as love, he's being tended to and rescued by his friend who hasn't been in any of the previous seasons of the show, but we need him now. So you ought to just pretend that they've been best buds. Is that Bobby Fish? But Kyler, it's not the other one.
Roddy Strong.
He was always friends with Von Wagner. He's just always been friends.
It's like in those buddy cop movies where they have to like explain a bit of backstory, and they're like, "Sige, you know, we've been partners for 10 years. You were there for me when my wife left me for that asshole." Oh, okay, so you've established that he's a best friend who's about to die in the opening scene. Got it.
It's Big Von. Big Von is
always sorry, I'm always dying over it.
He's always been a really close confidant of Kyle O'Reilly's. And you know what? He's gonna fight for his honor in the match later. Right. Where's Braun?
Where's the breaker?
Where's Braun Breaker? Why isn't he in the match? I know why he isn't in the match, because he's going to beat the guy who won the match. But make it make sense. I love how quick, essentially, Vince, this thing has become already.
Because I love the idea of that, like, cliched American sitcom opening credits where, like, the Undisputed Era, when it was all four of them, you do their pose on the baby, they'd all do that awesome thing in the middle of the ring, and then up diagonally to the side. And also Von Wagner. Like, just go back in the network and install him popping out to the side. Baby! Wagner!
Lance Von Erich.
What will happen next? Drake, are there anything you want to say about this? Sorry, Hamlet, you were just saying the piss there.
No. When I came back off holiday, Sidgwick, one of the first things he said with glee was that, yeah, I'm like, guess what they might be calling Walter? Von Wagner. So, like, if anything, this was like, initially it was a bit let down. I was like, oh, they're going to keep him as Walter. Never mind. But he was so, and it was filmed this way as well. He was so tall in the picture. It was class. It was like, Kyle, this is small. But look at this guy. Again, it's there's a lot of this that works for me, because it's like a ring full of workers and wrestlers competing for the vacated SmackDown World Heavyweight title, won by the great Carly, who holds it upside down. Like, touched a lot of those nerves for me. It worked for me. Look how big he is. You know what? I'm going to throw you into the deep end, because you could literally stand there and your head would still be with the water.
Why is he a Wagoner? Why is he Von? Von! Wagoner!
The Von dispute here. Von!
Right, speaking of size difference, Drake Maverick versus Rich Bloody Holland came next, and he murdered him. He just battered the poor bastard. He hits him with a backbreaker, an overhead belly to belly, European uppercut, short arm clothesline, overhead forearm. But that little plucky git, he doesn't want to quit. He's fighting back. No, massive headbutt from Rich Bloody Holland. Headbutts him again, hits him with northern grit. 1, 2, 3. We're not some garlic sauce with that, mate. Ridge Bloody Holland dominates Hamlet.
Yeah,
Ridge Holland squashes one of the few things that I genuinely, earnestly liked about the end of the old NXT. So I liked it just as much here. And they've done it again. This time it was the role of Drake Maverick to be Excalibur, because he's Grayson Waller and he's going to knock your brains out. Just like bring a guy like, oh yeah, we've been their best friends for 17 years. Me and Grayson go all the way back to a 205 live match you've never seen. Nobody watched 205 live. I got with me Grayson Waller. Just this will, I promise, people listen to this, like all of this will wear off. Like if you got all of the ironic joy that we did out of this episode, like it will wear off. So I'm going to like luxuriate in it this week. Oh, it's Grayson. That was me, middle of the night. You know, I didn't put it on Twitter, but like I didn't tell you guys, but I did watch live. Middle of the night message to WhatsApp Sidgwick. Sidgwick, Grayson Waller's here. I can't believe they've got Grayson Waller. It's very, very similar to Brian Danielson's debut, actually. Very similar.
I just love this. It is like, I use this quite a lot, but it's the only analogy I think makes the most sense. If you, right, programmed a bot to book NXT in the mud, overtaken by Vince McMahon, which is itself the most cynical scenario, and in fact, it actually happened. And you'd say, right, okay, I've got the most cynical mindset imaginable about the state of WWE and how Vince McMahon sees things in his deranged mind. I'm going to program this bot with like a random name generator component. And this is what this bot is going to do to book NXT. And it's this, just big lad upon big lad, squash upon squash, get your indie darlings in the bin, get them on their shelf. Get them in the bin. Get all this stupid goth stuff. It's man hates goth stuff. It's mad that the corporate ministry was a thing. Get this black darkness out of here. Get these big lads. What, you can't even remember their names, even if only one of them was introduced, because they're so inexplicable, Bron Breakker. Well, here's Von Wagner, Rich Bloody Holland. Here's Josh Briggs. You could honestly, the Dave Matthews Band. Are lucky it's been trademarked because Dave Matthews is next. He's going to last 2 weeks, much like the final solution in WCW, and then it's going to be all over for him. I just love all of this, man. Just big lads, squashing dudes, and looking hard, and main event in WrestleMania. And I love that.
More, only thing this missed from the Vince McMahon playbook was some like, some bouncing boobs on the fellas, wasn't there? Like some Gary Strydom peck bouncing. Let's have a bit more of that and we're good. We're golden.
I just love it, man. He's done this thing with the aim. Right, okay. Ciampa, not headlining WrestleMania. You're not going to headline WrestleMania. You're not going to headline WrestleMania. Looks at Von Wagner. Pauses. That looks at Drake Maverick. You're not going to headline WrestleMania. And Vince McMahon, when he had a brain in his head that wasn't soup, used to have this thing. The airport test. Mm-hmm. Will people go, look at you in an airport? Right, you're a star. Does your name sound stupid when I've bullied Fink and then afterwards got Finkel to say your name at WrestleMania? Does that sound too stupid in the main event of WrestleMania? Yes? Well, we can't do that name. The main event of WrestleMania 40 is going to be Von Wagner versus Bron Breakker. Is that his name? Bron Breakker?
Bron Breakker.
Someone's on has got to gone. It's Von versus Bron in the main event of anyway, right. Tommy Ciampa's backstage. He talks about being 908 days since he last had Goldie. But enough of all that bollocks, because it's now time for Tony D'Angelo. Yes! He goes here, you fucking schmucks. Oh, my God. I love this so much. A little peek behind the curtain here. We were slightly late starting recording today because normally I sort of collate my notes. And I rewatch the show and make sure I've got everything written and what have you. And I went, I got to write this promo for Beat 'em, guys, because Tony D'Angelo is a real star. So Tony D'Angelo's there. He's walking the streets of Chicago because he was born and raised in the streets of Chicago. And he comes from a long line of businessmen, if you catch his drift. He's got family interests. He's in waste management. He's in the fish market. He's in the meat market. You name it, they got a little hand in it, if you know what he's saying. He says he found his success in his own way. Yeah, amateur wrestling at the University of Buffalo. He was named an All-American in Greco-Roman style. But then, you know what happened, you schmuck? His family smartened it up and told him there's no real money to be made in amateur wrestling. You know where the real money is? At that point,
The mafia!
I thought you were going to say AEW, to be perfectly honest, anyway. You know where the real money is? NXT. I'll be seeing you soon. Tony D'Angelo out! Oh, what a guy! What a guy this is!
Oh. Oh. I was dying. Just the subtext. I love the subtext. One of the funniest things is when the subtext is in subtext. Just say he's Tony Soprano or something. Yeah, waste management. Yeah, like just like in The Sopranos.
If they don't name his finisher sleeping with the fishes. I'm done. I'm out. Huh? He should have on the one side of things, you got LA Knight saying thanks, but and on the other hand, you should call every person he wrestles a fucking schmuck, because that's what they are. And also credit to Reddit Squared Circle, who said that he's got an alter ego, a fiend-like alter ego called the Gabagool. So there you go.
I mean, I was loving. You know, we have waste management, fish market. Like, I'm in the mafia, guys. Just in case. I'm in the mafia. Honestly, man, I've got a mafia guy in NXT now, and it absolutely rules. It's just so funny. Like the amount of jokes we can play with as these vignettes unfold, the amount of storyline potential they can have. Like WWE loves its romance storylines, right? Loves them. We just saw a wedding on NXT on this very episode. On SmackDown, Dolph Ziggler's trying to graft Tony Storm. And they do a romance story here with one of the women of NXT. And D'Angelo?
Tony D'Angelo.
One of the women can say, I want to take the next step, you know, be getting frisky over here. And why don't you eat my pussy? And because he's a true mafia guy, go on, eat pussy, that's gay. Like in The Sopranos, you know?
Yeah.
That's what they could do, because that's what they think in The Sopranos.
Oh, God.
Probably when Uncle Jim goes down a bunker and eats some pussy. some pussy in secret.
Oh, this was the week, man. NXT, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. Hey, stop laughing, I'm talking here.
You want lose you? Am I a clown?
Tony, like, any good mafia names? What are you nicking all of this from? Tony, it is. Amazing.
Got Michael. Not an Italian enough.
We got a couple of assholes on a podcast. We can't use that name.
I think he should obviously debut, win the world title, obviously, and get himself a little bit of a stable. And he should get, like, as a henchman, should get Loomis. And they can say, hey, who's that guy you're hanging around with? And he can go, hey, that's Gaylord Tightlips. You don't talk to him, all right?
Not my word. If you didn't watch NXT, guys, if you didn't watch NXT, that's a lot less problematic later on, I assure you. I assure you, okay?
Middle name. This is the most fun we've had on an NXT review in years.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. There was this in one final beat.
And, Hamlet, it got even better because the Creed brothers were next, just wrecking dudes. Oh my God, what an arrival they've been.
It's legitimately hard to pivot from one thing we loved, because like ripping the piss out of it is such a joy, to legitimately, and I include AEW in this, one of the best things in wrestling. It's a great time to be a wrestling fan, strictly because of the, strictly because of the Creed brothers. It's AEW and the Creed brothers. These are fucking awesome. Like, we tried to put them over as best we could last week. I'm going to do it all over again, because you've got a completely different environment, a completely different setup, a totally different vibe, a different energy. This is NXT 2.0, blah, 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 blah. When an act is good, it doesn't matter where you put them. So you've taken them from the CWC to the soft play, and they're still absolutely incredible. Like, a inch perfect squash. They know how to be themselves. Like, every week they're giving you a spot that is just there, like one of your takeaway spots from the show you just watched, and indeed one of the takeaway spots from the week. I love that they've taken the meet in the middle aspect from Authors of Pain, because like, they're not around anymore, so why not use that thing? Because it just makes them look both great in sequence at the same time. They're fucking horrible. They're absolute, they're horrible bastards, and it's wrestling's fake, so you can just enjoy this. Like, Sidgwick's more prone to like the ghoulish side of things. This, like, it's not safe. Wrestling's really painful and it hurts, and I would never do it. They're all braver than me. But like, this is all within the confines of pro wrestling as well. It's just really, really, really well worked viciousness. I love these two.
Yeah, they just really enjoy hurting people so much so that even when someone's not tagged in, they're going, right, I'm going to get out of the ring, just batter this guy as well. They slap tag each other in the face to fire each other up. They're happy when their opponent gets a tiny bit of offense in. He's like, I love this.
Let me get him more. It's great. It's like a fire up.
He throws him into the ropes, and not like bouncing off, as in just like, well, we'll see what happens here. Just throws him into the top rope. And then I really hope, I don't know if this is official or not. So he hits the power slam. I think this was Julius, if I'm not mistaken. One of them, I apologize sincerely. The way they put him over, like, he literally never lost a match when he was doing wrestling, you know, as an All-American or whatever it was. That makes you think he's a big deal, this guy. So he power slams this guy. And then what they, I don't know whether they've just dubbed it this or not, but the phrase unnecessary clothesline as a finisher is just magic. You must have been on cloud nine with this.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome. I'll tell you what was my favorite thing about it. That squash last week was too much for WWE to take. I knew the energy would be slightly suppressed. The pace would be slowed down a little. It was frenetic. It wasn't just brutal. It wasn't just brimming with character. It wasn't just so well performed. It was frantic. Like, these people looked like they were in danger. I get the distinct impression from watching this week's squash that they were told to slow it down a little bit. And guess what? It was still awesome.
Post-match,
yeah, can we put, because obviously we, you know, these poor victims aren't even going to get a name, are they? A wrestling training thing, I imagine, is to exit the ring safely and with grace when you get thrown out of it. There's a way that, you know, you're going to get hoyed out the ropes or whatever. Like, credit to the job here for forgetting his training and like falling out the ring like a sack shit. Like, that looked so cruel. The way he just, like, it was like the, what we talked about earlier on, the sliding down the wall. That was him sliding down the edge of the ropes and just collapsing in a heap on the ground. He didn't look like he was being eliminated from a Royal Rumble or something. He looked like he didn't have a breath left in his body. It was like so well performed in their role as bags of flesh to punch.
I've got Dan Jarman and Trevor Skelly written down here. So they're going to get
great. They were great. But
post-match, Bivens, yeah, gets on the mic and puts over that victory and also introduces the newest member of the Diamond Mind, Ivy Nile. She said she's in great shape. She hasn't had a carb in 16 years. He gets her to flex. She looks incredible. And then all of a sudden, Kushida interrupts. He's back. He says that they all talk too much. He's ready for Roderick Strong. And Malcolm Bivens challenges him to a match for the Cruiserweight Championship next week. And Kushida appears to accept. Good stuff, this Hamlet.
Yeah, Kushida's going to lose the belt. the first opportunity, Kushida's losing the belt to the little guy that hangs around with the big guys. Roderick, who? The little guy with the big guys. This is, you know, in their defense, I guess, a continuation of the work they've done to build up to this title change. Kushida doesn't look terribly long for this new NXT. I don't know what the status of his WWE contract is, but I think he'll be used I think he's going to get used as a jobber when he's lost this title. I think for them to set this match up as quickly as they have tells me they want to get the belt into the Diamond Mine. The Creed brothers, the interesting thing about the Diamond Mine. I'm just thinking about that finisher again, that unnecessary clothesline. It's like a hidden blade, but in plain sight and better than anyone Karrion Kross ever threw. So like, I wouldn't be surprised if that, because she'd got leveled with that as well, because I sense that they'll be more interested in them two than whatever Roderick Strong's got to offer. The match should be good.
And what do you make of Ivy Nile Sidge being a new addition to the Diamond Mine?
Looks like a little killer. So that's cool. Kushida's promo wasn't well-timed at all. God bless him.
Right, let's get
Kushida.
Fatal four-way for the NXT Championship, the vacant NXT Championship, of course. It was LA Knight, Von Wagner and Tommy Ciampa going at it. It's your usual WWE fatal four-way, i.e. for the most part, two people are outside the ring to allow the other two to just have a normal match and spots and what have you. But Von Wagner got some good spots in there. He looks good early on. Eventually, Dunn's in there. He's having a showdown with Ciampa. Armbar into a stomp on Ciampa's arm, but then Knight breaks it all up. Knight gets sent to the outside. They brawl again. Wagner comes in, cleans house during the break. Wagner gets sent into the ring steps. Knight, at one point as we're back from the break, hits the blunt force trauma for a two count. He hits someone on Dunn. Dunn goes to the outside, but then Ciampa hits him with a widow's bell for a two count. Ciampa then does that mad corkscrew flip dive to everyone on the outside. He gets Pete Dunn back in the ring, hits that running knee, goes to the fairy tale ending. Dunn blocks it. Dunn snaps Ciampa's fingers. He hits the bitter end, but then LA Knight comes in and throws Pete Dunn out. Wagner hits an Olympic slam on LA Knight and gets a great near fall in there. Ciampa hits a knee lift to the jaw, but then Dunn hits an assisted German suplex. Dunn goes up top. LA Knight gets him up there with a suplex. Wagner hits a big slam. Ciampa breaks up the cover, though. Ciampa hits the fairy tale ending, I believe, on LA Knight. 1, 2, 3. Tommaso Ciampa is your new NXT champion. Didn't see that one coming, Sidge.
I didn't, but we know why it's happened. He's going to be positioned going forward. He's a transitional champion, I think. They couldn't have made it clear. I don't have to like reach for that thought or think very in depth to think about it. We know why it's happened. And it's a smart move. It will symbolize the shift away from NXT. And there's probably nobody better on that brand other than Gargano than Ciampa to really get the best out of a limited performer, whether it's not good or whether it's too green. Because look at what Ciampa did with Karrion Kross. Jesus Christ, what a courage of that was. In retrospect, miraculous. Absolutely miraculous work from Ciampa. So this is a genuinely smart decision. Genuinely, I'm full of praise for it, given where the brand is headed. If you want to legitimize these like meathead greenhorns and develop them along very quickly, Ciampa's the guy. It was unexpected. At the same time, you know, he's done well to get over within the drab confines of the CWC. There's a story being told there. It just feels like a nice thing to do for a loyal servant with a purpose. The match didn't blow me away, if I'm being perfectly honest. It was just brisk, fast-paced, nice enough, modern match, capital M, four-way. That's what it was. Didn't outstay its welcome. Didn't feel remotely big time at all, which was an issue. The ironic and genuinely aesthetically pleasing atmosphere is going to undermine this kind of thing, because what kind of big pivotal career moment can take place here? You know what I mean? That's when it starts to feel very much like, oh, this is just a bright developmental thing with colours to distract you from the fact that they're struggling to the transition spots and they're not moving their left foot because they're untrained rookies, essentially. That's what the colours are going to do. It's not just a Triple H burial. It's, look at that, don't look at, you know, drop them on his head. Because he's, you know, he's an absolute idiot. You can't work yet. So, yeah, nothing's going to feel important here was my takeaway from the match, which otherwise, you know what, if my anticipation of the plotting is accurate, I think it's very clever.
Yeah. In terms of Ciampa being
like winning the belt again. I don't think it's been done for no good reason, which it bodes well, I guess, you know, for whatever, you know, whatever it is they are setting him up with him as a transitional champion. That's, if you're transitioning somebody, it means you've got somebody in mind. So cool. They've thought beyond week one, you know, they're looking ahead. They want to try and keep this belt to mean something. Like everything else of old NXT, the belt itself looked like it didn't belong in the building. I don't know if you thought that. Much like Tommaso Ciampa in a lot of senses. Like a lot of them suddenly felt like they didn't belong on this show. So I would anticipate it's going to be part of a continual upheaval. And then once that belt goes, you can maybe think, well, really, is this... Yeah, it's the same in name, but not in legacy. As a match, like a lot was happening, but it felt like nothing was. And I didn't even mind that much because they were out of there in like 10 minutes or whatever. So I can't really complain too loudly about it. It was just for all the work that was being done in terms of spots and moves and bumps, like not one of them resonated. I didn't really feel anything for any of them. And I guess if the chase for the title had even had enough heft, then I would have done. You know, if like any of the near falls would have mattered, if the who won mattered. Ciampa's keeping this belt warm until they attack it with a paintball gun and give it to their guy. That's what he's there to do. And I think if they'd have tried to make it feel any more than that, they would have been lying. The only time this felt like any kind of betrayal of anything meaningful was when Ciampa was staring at it and going like, oh, Goldie, oh, God, I miss you, Goldie, and like whapping it out for Goldie. And it was like, how him, mate? Like,
this pattern is...
Don't jizz on a belt. Somebody got a lot of trouble for that. Like, this patter is ancient and it no longer belongs on this version of the show. So, like, what was cool was, Sidgwick pointed this out before, when he knocks his chair away at the end of his promo, that's Tommaso Ciampa of today, but he did it saying, tonight, I get Goldie back. It's like, oh, I like the new version of you better than that guy wanking on a belt. Like, sorry.
Who kind of torpedoed the Wednesday Night War because it was so boring and his chase of Adam.
Yeah, nobody bought into it, yeah.
Right, now it's time for the main event of the evening, Index's wedding. We get a lovely montage chronicling their relationship leading up to this point as the guests arrive. Dex is there with his groomsmen, and the grizzled young veterans are caught saying, there's no bloody chance this wedding's going to go off without a hitch, isn't it? Because look at him, I think there's going to be a fight, etc., etc. Out comes Indy Hartwell after the break, Johnny Gargano walking her down the ring. Everyone sits down. The ceremony starts. It's Indy Ophelia Hartwell marrying Dexter Gaylord Loomis.
That's the exact response they wanted out of me, and I've given them it. We know why they've called him Gaylord. Wilborn, can you elaborate on that? You do it.
So the priest asks Indy Hartwell away. Johnny Gargano says he's there, and he's just making sure that Indy Hartwell, sure, she really wants to do this. She's sure, he's sure. Okay, good stuff. And then the priest asks, who has the rings?
Hey, Lord, man. I know what they're thinking. I think it's funny. The thing is that this company is so multifariously awful that I think a lot of the people will be thinking, the second Vince gets in, they call him Gaylord. It could be Road Dogg. He's a dickhead as well.
He's there, isn't he? Like awful old white fellas that have done this stuff back when they imagined it would have got him a pop in the territories, like a homosexual, like in the frigging late 70s, early 80s or something, when like the crowd would have been baying for some poor guy's blood. It's 2021. Like, you know, Gaylord.
So
Vince howling down Victor, laugh louder, Vic.
So they ask who's got the rings. Gargano asks if Austin Theory's got them. Well, he's a bit thick and he says, we're in a ring, silly. And then
I wanted to die at that moment, like.
But I can't wait for Tony to pop a cap in his ass. Like
Tony D'Angelo.
Stupid asshole.
Were you the stupid one when I married you? Favorite Sopranos lad.
Guy's got an axe.
So Ikemen Jiro reveals it's him. He's got it in his snazzy old jacket whilst he's wearing his coloured Speedos. And Johnny takes them, hands them over, and we do the whole, if anyone's got a reason why these two should not be married, speak now, forever, hold your peace. Everyone sat there raises their hands. Dexter Lumis opens up his jacket and reveals an axe in there, and everyone slowly lowers their hands. Huge bap in the Wilborn household for that one, of course. They've written their own vows. Indy Hartwell says, Dexter, look, I know you're misunderstood by so many people. Some people see you as a creep, but I see you as a cuddly teddy bear. Some people see a stalker. Well, all I see is a well-groomed man with a great mustache who watches my every move. People say, you're a freak. Damn right he's a freak. Dexter's my freak, she says. She'll always remember that one time when he snuck into her bed late at night when Johnny and Candace were, oh, shut up. Dexter Lumis tells her, talk about that. Johnny, furious, him and Candace can't believe what's been suggested here. Let's rapidly move on. And Indy concludes by saying, I love the fact that you never lose a staring contest. You'll always keep me safe. I love you. What a wonderful selection of vows that was there from Indy Hall. Now, it's Dexter Gaylord Lumis' turn to recite his vows, of course. He stands there, everyone shushes, and he gives her a little thumbs up. And the priest says, that's it? No vows? Come on. I know you might be a bit nervous, but come on, you've got to do your vows. It's your bloody wedding. And Dexter Lumis responds by choking the life out of him. Blacks out, and we've got no priest. What's going to happen? They want Gargano to do it. He says, I can't do it. Regal, you do it. Regal's there. He sat with a zombie referee, of course. But then to save the day, here comes Beth Phoenix. She was afraid something like this was going to happen, so she got ordained last night. She says, you know what? Let's cut to the chase. And Andre Chase stands up and says, did someone say Andre Chase? Odyssey Jones. I love Odyssey Jones. Just goes behind him and goes, sit down right now. He gets a huge bap, gets a chant from the crowd. He sits back down. They do the exchange of the rings. Do you take him? Do you take her? Blah, blah, blah. Until death, hopefully due to natural causes and not an axe, you do part. She asks Indy, Dexter. And Indy, of course, says, I do, I should say that. And Dexter, she says, you know what? You know, I'll take that as a yes. She goes to conclude the ceremony and Dexter Lumis covers her mic, leans forward and says the words, I do. Huge pop. Tony D'Angelo size goddamn pop. And Beth
says, I lost more at that than I did at the wedding.
Beth says, by the power vested in me by freeordainedministers.com, she pronounces them husband and wife. They kiss. He does the carrying of her out of the ring, and we cut backstage to see Tommaso Ciampa watching on a monitor when Bron Breakker shows up. Ciampa congratulates him on his first win, extends a hand, they shake, and then there's a stare down as the show goes off the air. Hamlet, a perfect wrestling wedding and a tease of potentially things to come for that world title, eh?
Yeah, I just really enjoyed a bit of light relief after such a heavy show. This was fine. Like, had a couple of cute gags in. Nothing that was like, other than Dexter's middle name, that was so bad that I could see the hand of the author and I was angry with it, which is often the problem with very, very heavily WWE-influenced comedy, is that too much you're not watching jokes play out, you're watching the process that got you to the jokes. Weddings is one of these areas that, for some reason, even though you can see both happening, it seems to play out well, and I think it did here. Like, I also quite like, they stand a better chance of surviving as they are, anyway, the way... We were kind of talked about the way we're probably due a babyface turn. If you were going to have a group that was going to turn, there's quite a lot to like. There's quite a certain amount of idiotic charm about the way, and this was pretty much their formal babyface turn. So that was fine too. Low on scandal or chaos, so I don't think it's going to be one of the more memorable ones, but not an awful time. Like, genuinely not a terrible time.
They thought quite deeply about this lame rubbish that I didn't really think was funny. I'll give them that. Like, the whole Beth Phoenix thing, she's for weeks has been playing the woman.
the time of the wedding and how buzz she is, you know, it got paid off. The character stuff of like, I do, that's been like way too long of my life in the making. I couldn't think of a specific time metric when I first was confronted with Dexter Loomis, but it was way too long in my life in the making. The thing about Andre Chase, did someone say Andre Chase? And my first thought was, is that Andre Chase? Who's this?
I love that they could have done that gag because of this theme of the show. They could have been like, they could have created a character called Brandon Vow. Did somebody say Brandon Vow? And we were like, oh yeah, it's that long-standing NXT star.
So a lot of the people involved clearly were having fun, that this thing that they've clearly contributed to the process saw come to fruition. Indy Hartwell, who's been the star of the whole thing, the staring contest line got a huge pop in what was formerly the CWC. So I was happy that people responded. I was more warmed by that crowd response to that gag, even though I didn't think it was that funny, purely because she's grafted her ass off throughout the storyline. I'm in a, this is typical NXT 2.0. This is so NXT 2.0, guys. When they tried to be funny, I didn't even go, eh. I just actively thought it was pretty rubbish. But, you know, they thought about it and they crafted things. As opposed to, oh, that guy's turned. Good to see a direction for him. Oh, if the heel turn was rubbish, it doesn't automatically make it good. They crafted. I enjoy seeing craft in front of my eyes. But in typical NXT 2.0 fashion, it's already typical. Instantly iconic, rubbish this. The funnier bits aren't the comedy. Like, Bron Breakker. I'm legitimately not doing a bit here. That's his name. Bron Breakker went up to Ciampa, right, at the end of the show to tease the future direction. And he said, congratulations on winning the title. And in response, Tommaso Ciampa went, thanks, Bron Breakker. And then said something else. just please kill me now. Like, when we go to the office, Hamflet, do I go, hey, Michael Hamflet, do you want a cup of tea? Hey, Adam Wilborn, are we ready to record? Like, no one talks like this. It just, it's hilariously bad.
I don't want anything off you, Michael Sidgwick, on account of that game of pool you beat me at last Wednesday in the What Culture office.
I just, honestly, it's class, man. These, the unseen cousins of NXT, this era rules so hard, but unfortunately, you can only pretend that they've been in your life once because they're going to be in your life next week. And it's not going to be anywhere near as perversely entertaining.
Yeah, what just we conclude here? What do you both say? Starting with you, what do you think of NXT 2.0?
I've just said it. Like, we've got the funniest week has happened of Von Wagner's coming to the rescue of close friend Kyle O'Reilly in an event that we think you're going to take seriously. Hilarious. You'll never beat that. You'll never see the colours again as new for the first time. At some point, the meathead energy buzz is going to wear off. You're going to think, oh God, these Creed brothers and this Breakker fella, they're green. They're greener than the bit of the logo. But what a wonderfully, ironically great first week.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Takeovers are dead. That was my prevailing feeling.
I have to agree. I like the big guy, the big jacked, boring Vince guys when they're used correctly, and some of them get over and some of them got charisma, which is tremendous. But I even remember the first NXT title match when Seth won the belt and won the tournament. He was in the final against Jinder Mahal. So even then, Triple H hadn't quite eliminated the people that were very much of the old Vince ways to get Seth was going over Jinder, so that was the main thing. Seth was a Triple H guy. And people knew him from Ring of Honor, first case of Triple H embracing the indies a little bit. But he was fighting Jinder Mahal, who Triple H had to put there as almost a way to say, we're absolutely phasing out the tall, muscular, bland guys from the past for the indie guys that you like, that we're going to put a bit of polish on. We're going to fix their fundamentals because we like everything else they do, and we know that you like them. It's going back the other way. Tommaso Ciampa is going to be Seth Rollins losing to the next generation's Jinder Mahal. Like, that's NXT, like, feeling like it's just come full circle and then on to the next one. So this was really fun because of loads of novelty value. I'm not saying there isn't going to be entertainment to be found in some of these characters in the weeks to come, but certainly from a novelty perspective, I think we've already hit, which is not great after episode one, I think we've already hit peak NXT 2.0. Like, everything is going to be on a sliding scale at this point, I think.
I had a far, far better time watching NXT than I have in months. So credit where that's due. And let us know your thoughts on NXT 2.0 on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Well, actually, you can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at...
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn, your schmuck, on Twitter. You can follow us all, as I said, at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, including myself and Michael Hamflett, previewing that Outlaw Mud Show AW Dynamite later on today. No Michael Sidgwick. He's got the afternoon off. And the inmates are running the assignment, basically. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, as this weekend, myself and the Dadley Boys book Tony D'Angelo to be the one that out...
Stop D'Angelo, I need to go.
That Al wrestles and defeats Roman Reigns using John Cena's entrance of WrestleMania. How do you like that, huh? Right, anyway, this has been the NXT 2.0 review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us. And we will see you soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.